This is episode Bravo of the Software Freedom Law Show. Hi, and welcome to the 12th episode of the Software Freedom Law Show. We are on location today.
Well, I don't feel like we're on location at this moment. We were today because we're here in San Francisco to attend the Linux Collaboration Summit organized by the Linux Foundation, and they invited us to come out to speak today.
That's right, and we're still in San Francisco, so yeah. I feel like we're on location.
I feel like I'm in a hotel room myself, and it's a very different setup than we usually have because the table's not high enough. We don't have your taped-together box that we normally use to get the mic
it's true.
Right level.
So if we sound a little bit different than we normally do, that's why.
Yeah, I tested the sound. Sounded like we were okay. I suppose Dan, our producer, will tell us. Producer Dan. We should call him Producer Dan.
I think we should.
Producer Dan will let us know
if
the sound
is a problem.
We need to
give him a jacket.
Do what they wear, like...
Like a producer jacket.
Like Nehru jacket? They wear a Nehru jacket or something? Isn't that the kind of jacket you used to get in the 70s?
I really have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
But that'll make for a good note at some point.
I'm not connected to the internet. I can't check.
Okay. Well, we're not going to talk about jackets. We're actually going to talk about an item of current events.
Correct.
You know, and it's a topic that's been one of conversation at the collaboration summit.
We usually, just because we're covering the legal issues in the free software world, it's not often really that there's big news. I guess the only time we had somewhat news is when we produced it, when we did the GCC exception. We did the exceptional podcast, as we called it.
That's right. We did talk a little bit about Bilski, but it wasn't current events by the time our podcast was published.
But we've actually been doing more just-in-time recording. One of our original ideas, we cord podcast ahead so we could basically be lazy for weeks. But we've been doing a lot more just-in-time recording, so we're recording this just a couple days before you're going to hear it. And in the last 2 weeks since our last podcast, there's been a whole lot of news about this issue of the Microsoft TomTom lawsuit.
And its settlement.
And its settlement. Yeah. And there's been a lot of discussion here at the Linux Collaboration Summit in the halls about it. And I think it's a really important issue to cover and talk about because the issue of software patents and the way they intersect with free software is fundamentally the biggest threat that free software faces these days. And this lawsuit was about basically Microsoft patents and Microsoft enforcing those patents against TomTom.
Now, I think a lot of people were, and I know I was surprised to see the lawsuit to begin with, because Microsoft had been making a lot of friendly overtures within the free and open source software communities. So I for one, was kind of surprised to see that because I know that they had made some real inroads with a lot of organizations.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that the Microsoft pro-open source stance is a PR campaign. And if people have been following, one thing that has been, there was sort of a thing at the end of last year where Sam Ramji and I were going back and forth in the press, which I think was an example of where they're really sort of trying to put a PR, positive PR face on their involvement. An interest in open source and free software, but it's not really genuine in my view.
I was surprised when you reminded me that that the press release with the patent threat, where the number of patents that...
Right, it wasn't a press release, but what happened
was... Oh, it wasn't a press release, it was an interview?
A couple of interviews, around 16 months ago.
It was 16 months ago, and
yeah,
I was really surprised because I actually thought it was longer ago.
No, just 16 months ago... we had a number of different statements made by Steve Ballmer saying basically that they were going to use their patent pool to attack open source free software, and specifically they mentioned Linux, and in fact I think in this case they were referring to the kernel itself. And they claimed there was a certain number of patents that they had that were infringed by Linux, and they were going to use them. And I've been calling out Sam Ramji on this for months. You know, and this was right around the time Sam Ramji started going to conferences and saying these things about Microsoft. And yet his CEO was out there saying these things.
And also, I mean, at the same time, they were becoming sponsored. They became a sponsor of the Apache Foundation. They were a sponsor of OSCON.
Yes, that's correct. They actually had a keynote in OSCON. So, I think that I really think that we really have to be skeptical about what Microsoft says on these issues.
Well, I mean, I think that the fact that they filed this suit, I mean, speaks
volumes. But the suit is the tip of the iceberg. That's the thing, is that you don't, as you know, you can probably explain better than I can, that the lawsuits don't get filed lightly by anyone, mm-hmm. be it Microsoft or anyone else. It's not like, generally speaking, companies don't want to be litigious. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably correct. Don't you
think? I think that's generally true.
Right. So if you consider the fact that Microsoft, like any other company, is not intending to be litigious.
Well, it's hard to tell what they're intending to be, honestly.
I suppose that's true.
I mean, I don't mean to just be argumentative. I mean, just trying to anticipate their intentions is a bit difficult.
Yeah, I think...
They're sending mixed messages, that's for sure.
Well, they're sending mixed messages, but from the top down, the message has been clear. Steve Ballmer, 16 months ago, said he's going to attack Linux with patents. And 2 months or 4 months ago, whatever it was, we hear that they're suing TomTom mm-hmm. over a variety list of patent issues, some of which are patents that specifically read on things that Linux does. I mean, I think that the fat file system patent, which I think most people agree is probably not a valid patent, reads on Linux because Linux implements the fat file system as one of its possible mm-hmm. file system options. And if you want to read and write Windows media, any sort of media formatted for Windows, you have to be able to read and write that file format. So I think that message is very clear. Sam Ramji is just a distraction from what Microsoft's really trying to do, which is attack free software with their patent pool.
And then for people who haven't been following this case closely, there were also a number of other patents that were asserted in the case.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing to think about. And this is where, I'm sort of... I have a problem with both TomTom and with Microsoft in this whole thing. Because TomTom is not primarily a free software company. They use Linux, glibc, BusyBox, a few other programs to make their core operating system for some of their devices, primarily the Go device that they have. Mm-hmm. But the applications are all proprietary software. And most of the patents, it seems, that were mentioned in the press statements around this particular lawsuit were patents that were for things like mapping applications, mounting map data in cars, those types of patents, which all are about the proprietary software that TomTom develops, mm-hmm. not about the free software and open source software that they ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, I find it troubling, but it's not really that I find it troubling per se. I just think that the community should be skeptical about both companies in this case. Certainly, I think Microsoft is the true bad actor in the situation, but TomTom isn't an angel either from the point of view of our community. They're primarily developing proprietary software, and as most people know, I'm a very hardcore free software person, and I want to see more free software developed, and most of their applications just aren't. They're proprietary software. So that's one issue I think that we should be calling TomTom out on, and point out that a large part of the case was not about free software; it was mm-hmm. about these proprietary.
Right,
patents.
I don't want us to lose sight of the fact that a major portion of the case was.
That's true.
I think you're right to dwell a little bit on the business model there and the licensing situation, but at the same time, some of the patents that were asserted were on free and open source software, and Microsoft is very aggressive in this case. I mean,
correct. Okay, so let's look at that point of view and how that played out. So, there's one other point I want to make, which is this is, I think, the tip of the iceberg. As I was saying before, companies don't go to court lightly. And it's very likely, and because we know that the Microsoft Novell thing happened, it's very likely Microsoft's been going around to lots of companies asserting these patents in a private way that didn't go to lawsuit. Do you disagree with that?
No, I don't disagree with that. But I guess I don't like speculating over what they may or may not be doing. I think you're right that they are most likely this is a representative of a licensing business model.
Correct.
And we shouldn't lose sight of that.
Correct. And I think we also have to we have to assume the worst, that they are going around to companies and enforcing their patents.
We aren't seeing
every patent enforcement they do. Only some of them become public, like did with the Microsoft Novell deal and now has done with the Microsoft TomTom mm-hmm. dispute. So that's a concern as well, and we have to worry about how often this is happening. And we also have to worry, frankly, that TomTom settled.
Well, right. I mean, you know, I guess this is what I was about to say, is that while, you know, I would be cautious about calling out TomTom too much for settling, I mean, you can sort of understand why a company would want to settle, because it's so expensive to fight something like this. It's a shame, because it settling for a deal only makes the situation worse for everyone else.
That's right. And
but at the same time, you know, it's so expensive to see something like this through that you can't blame a company for settling either. They have to act in their own business interest.
That's true. That they're required to do that because they have an obligation to their shareholders, mm-hmm. and so forth. But I didn't really expect TomTom to come forward and be a superhero about this and say that they're going to fight it on behalf of the open source and free software community. On the other hand, what is being seen in the press statements that's very troubling is the assumption that this deal is compliant with GPL version 2. Now, there is some disagreement about that issue, but I firmly believe that there's a good chance the agreement might be out of compliance with V2. The problem is we can't know for sure.
Well, I mean, I think that all the statements that you'll see that we and others have made say that we don't know. But we don't know that it does either.
That's true.
That none of this information was made public. And I think, you know, while Microsoft is a public company, I doubt that this is material. But I was going to say materially enough, that means that that the financial amount of the settlement is relevant when you look at the overall size of Microsoft. So I don't know that it's going to rise to the level of importance and the fiscal importance for Microsoft to disclose it.
Actually, just explain that in a little bit detail for our listeners, because you are a former securities lawyer,
right.
So you actually know the details on this. But I think, and you've talked to me about it before, so I know what mm-hmm. you're saying. But for our listeners, why don't you sort of explain what those, you know,
sure.
what, how that works?
Yeah, when a company is a public company, so they're mm-hmm. listed on a public exchange, mm-hmm. like New York Stock Exchange, mm-hmm. for example, there's certain information that is required to be disclosed by the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission. And so the SEC requires that that certain periodic reports are made. So those are like annual and quarterly reports. They give certain budget information. And you basically have to report on all key activities of the company. So in Microsoft's case, you know, you would, or in any company's case, you report on litigation matters, any recent occurrences. They have to file any material contracts. And the test for what you have to disclose to the public is one of materiality. So in other words, the SEC says, well, you know, we don't want to waste everybody's time. We don't need to know every little detail. You know, if you're spending $20 on a cab, we don't need
right.
to know about it.
Okay, so then your theory would be this deal is just going to be too small.
I think that's probably.
I don't know because
we don't really have that much information
generally.
But I would guess that it's not going to get disclosed in that way. If it were to rise to that level of materiality, then you know, then they would have to file the settlement agreement.
Okay, so
publicly.
So that basically means that there's nothing we're going to find out from the settlement that tells us for sure whether it violates V2.
I doubt it. I don't know for sure.
Yeah. So we should probably talk about that, the reasons that it might violate V2. Now the violation, if it were to occur, would be in Section 7 of V2, which is, Eben, our boss, has often called this the Rorschach test of the GPL, because everybody looks at Section 7 V2.
I haven't heard that.
Oh, you haven't heard that, and sees what they want to see, and, mm-hmm. and everybody has their own description of what it does. And it's true that that two people in this community, anyway, myself and Jeremy Allison, look at Section 7, and we see clearly ourselves that these types of deals are at least intended to be prohibited by that section, because its goal is to make sure that if you enter into a side agreement mm-hmm. outside of GPL with a third party, you know, so somebody who's happens to hold a patent, for example, on the technology you're distributing to a user, which that describes the situation, TomTom distributing to user, Microsoft is third party holding patent. In those cases, if you have to make a side agreement that doesn't allow you to continue distribute under full terms of GPL, granting people the right to copy, modify, and distribute.
But that's the thing, is that we don't know whether or not they... Okay.
Correct. Agreed. We don't know if they entered an agreement, but we theorize because they're saying in the press, well, you know, our users will get a license to this patent. Well, the thing is, if their users get a license to the patent, then every downstream recipient ought to be receiving one. Now, I read Section 7 of V2, and I see that that has to be true. Other people read it and say that doesn't have to be true. So that's where the ambiguity mm-hmm. that people argue about V2 is. And, you know, we could keep disagreeing that till the cows come home in part mm-hmm. because we won't know for sure because we'll never be able to see that agreement to see did they enter into an agreement like that. Mm-hmm. I do have a little bit, if you'll indulge me, I have a little bit of a thought experiment that I think would allow us to find out. If we later see Microsoft enforcing that patent publicly against somebody else, they may be able to argue that the TomTom deal must have been a violation because how would Microsoft be able to enforce that patent reading on Linux to a fourth party if they didn't get a if TomTom didn't get a license that was royalty free for all downstream?
Well, that's provided that party makes that argument. You know?
They could, I mean, though. That's the question. Well, we'll make that argument if we observe it, right? But we'll have to observe it in public, and that probably won't happen because, as I was saying
and
earlier,
who knows what representations there will have been made in that the communication between Microsoft and that other company.
Yeah, it's really tough. And I should talk for a moment about the reason why this is so important. A lot of people say, well, what does it matter if Microsoft, if I have a TomTom device, maybe I'm indemnified. If I don't have a TomTom device, do I have a patent license? Does it matter? Microsoft's not likely to come after an individual user who happens to have Ubuntu on their computer and is reading a FAT file system. So what's the true harm? The harm is actually that it creates two classes of users. The whole idea of GPL was to make sure that everyone was on equal footing. And when you start having these side agreements that grant more rights and more permissions and more assurances to some parties and not others under GPL, then you create unequal classes of people. Mm-hmm. And so if you're able to buy a patent license from Microsoft, you can be more assured, or you're able to get it somehow, you can be more assured than some other users. So it's certainly a violation of the spirit, because the spirit of the license was always to make sure everyone's on equal footing. And if some people can feel safer in the code and exercising the use of that code because they have some sort of patent license where other people don't have that patent license, even if they never get sued, they sort of have to live in fear of being sued for patent infringement, while other people don't have to live in fear of that.
And this is a good example of how licensing needs change over time within licenses. And this will become relevant in GPLv3, which we'll come back and talk about in just a moment.
Yeah. So I think we've raised a lot of complicated concepts in our last segment, so I want to basically summarize where we're at in this discussion. I think in both cases of TomTom and Microsoft, there's something negative to be said about what's happening. I agree Microsoft is the big enemy here. Fight the real enemy, as it were. But also, TomTom has made a settlement. It could be a violation of V2. We can't really know for sure. There's mm-hmm. maybe some hypothetical scenarios whereby we might figure out at some later date that it's in violation. If it turns out that...
I think it's a stretch, but make Bradley's day if this happens.
Exactly, yeah. And if the interpretation that Jeremy Allison and I feel about GPL V2 turns out to be true, it's all very, very complicated, and we won't really know. So we sort of have to live with the fact that it's being represented as V2 compliant. I sort of go at that, but... We live with it.
It could be, and we don't know.
Well, it could be, whatever.
And we don't have any information.
I'm a little bit more of hardcore on this and upset about it. So I sort of have this concerned attitude about it. You're rolling your eyes at me.
I am rolling my eyes, but that would have been a silent. Silent on the podcast until
No, it's good that I mean I'm not a lawyer and I'm an advocate, and as an advocate this is a really important
issue. And my legal opinion is useless where I have no information
and I like to go off half-cocked with sufficient information to complain about the evils of proprietary software occasionally. So maybe I'm doing a little bit of that here.
Well, all of that leaves us at, GPLv3.
Correct, because I think that, so San Francisco has background noise just like New York.
It's, right, we thought that we would be safe from these, from ambulances and sirens.
Well, any city, it's that way. Any city on any coast, it's
I hope you can hear it, because last time we said that You we refer to, it. Yeah.
They're going to hear that, I'm sure. But that's cool. We're on location here in San Francisco, where fire trucks are rushing to save people who are being given bad patent licenses by... that's probably not what they're going to say. Oh, well. But so I'm really cracking carrying on now. This is pretty cool. I think it's correct. And V3, actually, there's certain terms in V3 that came out of direct concerns about this sort of situation. Specifically, the Microsoft Novell deal, which was basically seen as a side deal made for patent licenses in a manipulative way, designed basically to create that two class of user system that I was talking about.
And I knew you were going to bring this up, but actually it's kind of a cool time to tie in with the discussion about the SEC and securities mm-hmm. laws that we mm-hmm. had in the previous segment, because if you're interested in learning the details or most of the details about the Microsoft Novell deal, those agreements were in fact filed as an exhibit to Novell's filings. Mm-hmm. So for Novell, it was material enough that they had to file those agreements. So you look, some of the interesting provisions are actually redacted for confidentiality.
It looked like all the good ones were. Basically, all the ones that really related to what we were
in a surprising way,
about.
Actually. But
that was very frustrating.
Yeah.
But, there shouldn't be allowed to redact. They got to file.
But anyway, so that's available, and it's interesting to look. And occasionally, whenever there's a news item like this, I follow it up with looking online at the SEC's website. It's a system called EDGAR, and you can go and look up all of these companies and see what they've had to file.
Boy, you really are a securities lawyer geek, aren't you?
Well, it was 5 years or 6 years, five years, something like that, of being a securities lawyer.
Yeah. So the way that interacted with the GPLv3 process was that this deal happened during the drafting, and we realized in the process that we had to address this sort of thing, because there was this perception that Section 7 of GPLv2 did not somehow cover those types of deals, although there's some argument that it does, as I've been talking about. But to make it clearer so that people knew that making these side deals was a violation of GPL was something that was really important to the V3 process, mm-hmm. and in fact it was done. And so
with the Microsoft Novell deal being grandfathered.
Well, that's what happened effectively. Basically, the decision was made primarily that it was unfair to retroactively impact people in that way, because people mm-hmm. believed that some types of deals like this were V2 compliant. And many deals are made like that are not as sort of malicious as the Microsoft deals. And so there was a lot of deals that could have been affected by it. And the decision was made that the date set for when that term came into play was the date it first appeared in a public draft of the V3 process, mm-hmm. so that the people were on notice, basically, mm-hmm. Colbert Report style, on notice. So we put on the notice board, side deals about patent licensing, and now everybody knows from that date forward that it's going to be in V3, and they're definitely not going to be allowed to make them under V3. And it's quite clear, really, based just on the press statements made by TomTom and Microsoft, that had there been anything licensed under V3 in TomTom's distribution, that this deal would have been a violation.
And this is, I think, one of those situations where we actually see features of V3. I think there's a lot of confusion about changes in V3 from V2. And this is an example of where a new license allows you to address situations that have maybe changed. So where the legal climate or background has shifted over the years, you know, being able to create a new license that specifically addresses that and updates for those situations is very useful. And this is one of the features of V3.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, when you look at sort of the, as our colleague Richard Fontana would say, the legislative history of GPL, you note that the GPLv2 was written at a time before really heavy software patent cross-licensing deals were being made. Richard Stallman, as the author of V2, really knew that patents were a threat, because there were already talk of software patents. Lots of people were getting software patents in those days in 91 and 92. But it was not sort of this large industry of software patent enforcement like it is now. So he didn't really know how to draft the text exactly to address every possible patenting situation. Of course, drafting in the mid-2000s, it's very obvious the types of patent deals that were going to be made and were being made. In fact, Microsoft Novell did was being made right before our eyes during the V3 process. So it was an opportunity to really clearly say the types of things that were supposed to be prohibited under V2 maybe are, maybe aren't, depending on who you talk to make that explicitly clear under V3. The intention always was to stop these types of side deals that create two classes of users. So it's my feeling, really, that this is an opportunity for us to really, in the community, start talking again, as we had a nice side conversation today that you heard some of, about switching to V3. Because I think a lot of people have focused on the arguments about V3 of new terms that people aren't completely comfortable with. But I think pretty much everybody in the community is very frustrated with the idea that patents are going to be used to mess up and block free software advancement. And when you look at the patent clauses in V3, they have a tremendous amount more detail about making sure that downstream recipients get patent licenses for all the code in the GPL V3 distribution, and that there's not some sort of sneaky side deal being made by patent holders with distributors of GPL V3 systems.
I think it takes time to get comfortable with a new license, but as there are more and more of these situations that show where improvements were made in V3 from V2, where there's clarity where there was less clarity before, I think people will... there's another siren.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, people will be more ready to adopt.
Emergency, upgrade to V3 now. but seriously, I think it's really important to start thinking about this question. We know for sure that Microsoft's plan is to make their software patent pool the weapon against free software. And I try to apologize a little bit for being so aggressive on this. But historically, for me, I go back to getting involved within a few weeks of when I went full-time at the Free Software Foundation was when Microsoft started its GPL as an un-American cancerous virus that eats all software like a Pac-Man campaign. I was a victim of basically Microsoft McCarthyism. They said I was un-American for supporting the GPL. I mean, and that, I think, attitude has not changed within Microsoft.
Well, I think what's interesting is that I think with respect to Microsoft, a lot of people have been saying, you know, we judge them by what they do, not by what they used to do. But this is an example of what they are doing.
Right. And my point in bringing up this past history, and people say that I'm too obsessed with the history of what Microsoft has done, I haven't seen a change. You know, I look through all of the 2000s, and everything that they've been doing for this last decade has been to stop free software one way or the other. Sam Ramsey's job is to go out there and kill us with kindness, and Sam Ramsey is indeed a nice guy. I like him as a person, but that's his job, to come out and pretend to be our friend, while his CEO is saying, we're going to kill you with patents, and his legal team is filing lawsuits to enforce patents against Linux users. And that is the reality of what Microsoft's doing, not 10 years ago, which I was first complaining about, but a month ago, less than a month ago.
Yeah, I think we can have a whole nother podcast on patent licenses and how you should react if somebody tells you to get
them. Yeah, we've been meaning to do a show on that, and these events sort of forced us to jump ahead a little bit. You know, I think we've been trying to build the podcast as a series of educational broadcasts. I was trying to think of another word to not say podcast again, but it's, a series of discussions about issues to help people get on board about understanding all these issues, because there's so many complex issues here. And if those of you who are new to the issues of patents and so forth are confused by this, I certainly apologize, and email us questions, and maybe we'll try to clarify them in the next episode if there was pieces of this you didn't understand. But I think it's important to note that the goal of GPL is to make sure that these other legal systems, like the patent system, don't come in and effectively stop free software from operating the way it's supposed to. I mean, the thing to keep in mind is GPL is a copyright license, so it's focused on the issues of the copyrights of the software, but it's aware of the fact that other systems, like the patent system, can come in, cover software, and basically make ineffectual the copyright rights that it's trying to do. And in fact, that's what Microsoft is trying to do with their patent enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, this is a problem with overlapping legal regimes, too.
Yeah. Let's spend like a brief minute or two talking about that. It's weird. Is it really the case? I used to say, and a lawyer, not a lawyer, works with us, but a third-party lawyer once said to me I was wrong about this. The idea that software is somewhat unique and that multiple regimes cover it at once? Or does that happen a lot? Are there often regimes in conflict?
I think there are legal regimes that are applicable to different situations. I mean, And when you analyze any situation, you think, okay, you know, how does liability law affect this? How does, you know, you go through all of the different regimes and you see what could possibly affect a situation. And sometimes it's quite complicated. But software, it seems like a caricature of this, because we've got copyright law, and we've got trademark law, and we've got patent law. I mean, we've got trade secrets, you know, trademark law, but trade secrets. So,
so there's so many systems coming after it at once. It's really, and this is the unfortunate scenario of so many legal systems trying to tear down the ability for developers to work that spawns for software.
I mean, I wouldn't say that they're trying to tear it down. I think what I would say is that they're inadequately applied as software is concerned, because they were developed for other situations. Sure. Copyright really came out of, you know, trying to protect the works of authors of literary works and painters and, you know, artists. Yeah. And trademark was really protecting the businessman who was marketing a product under a certain name. Mm-hmm. And patent law was, you know, protecting a guy in a lab who spent 20 years developing a, you know,
a single thing that you need
some reaction or something that, you know, that if other people had that information right away, he would not be able to recover his costs.
Yeah, and software is just not a good fit for any of those systems in a real sort of way without major changes to those systems. And it was the threat. I mean, the point I was making is it was the threat of how those systems were going to tear down the way developers in the world of freedom operated. That Stallman, for example, recognized in his MIT community, and that we used to have in the collaboration communities of the early programmers. Though that's the thing we're trying to restore by using these systems, and we have to have licenses that protect us from all sides. It has to not just be a copyright license, but a license that talks about these patent issues and tries to meet Microsoft step for step on this, because they're going to use every trick in the book as they crumble to try to stop what they see as their biggest competitor, and their biggest competitor is freedom.
I really feel like that's a great place to stop.
You don't want me to rant for like another 45 minutes about how patents are destroyed or
that we need to protect freedom sounds you know, I think we've covered most of the major particularly relevant points, and we've got so many other podcast topics now.
Yes, it's true.
we've touched on a lot of things.
And this is, I'm very passionate about this because it's been something I've been watching for basically 10 years now. And you know, I don't want the community to give in on this. You know, Microsoft is losing the war against us, we can win if we hold steadfast to our principles of making the world better through software freedom.
Yeah, I can't improve on that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for indulging my ranting.
You for joining us. I think this is I think this is a very important issue. I mean, and as our press release says, I don't think it's over yet. I mean, I think, you know, I don't think that this issue is resolved and going away. I think we're just beginning to deal with it.
Okay. So in 2 weeks, we'll have a new podcast.
We'll be back in New York.
And maybe less street noise.
Right. So we'll see you then.
And email podcast@softwarefreedom.org if you have questions.
Great. The Software Freedom Law Show is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This show is released under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States License.